which at one time involved killing or capturing over 1,000 dolphins. And it was through a process called drive hunting, in which they're herded toward the shore and ultimately into a very narrow cove. After the cove won, Taiji was deluged with protesters. I mean, animal rights protesters already had Taiji on their radar before the film, but afterwards it really was a destination. And that was because it was for those of you who haven't seen it, it was very explicit footage of the killing of these dolphins. So Megumi, who was born in Japan, also went to Taiji in 2010, I believe was your first time, and realized that there was a more nuanced story to be told. And I'm gonna leave it at that because I don't wanna spoil anything about the movie, but I will say that the range of people who have come tonight to see this, who are interested in this movie, reflects the broad range of issues that the movie addresses. You know, yes, animal rights and environmentalism, for sure. Public health as well. Localism versus globalism. Heritage versus modern times. And communication, both cross-cultural communication and communication via the medium of film. I'd like to thank the Pacific Council on International Relations, International Policy, sorry, Thomas, and the Japan-America Society of Southern California for helping support this program tonight by publicizing the film and encouraging members to come. A couple of housekeeping reminders. The restrooms are right outside the entrance, and then emergency exits, if we need them, are just over here and behind you. Enjoy the film, and please be respectful. It's a very, the cove aroused a lot of emotions, as does this issue in general, but I think that there's a really very interesting conversation to be had, and fortunately Megumi is here afterwards to have it with us, so thank you very much.
で将来的にはこの垣根を取ってですね、この出入りが自由に、代用と自由にしたいな、必ずこれを実現して、世界がですね、ポーブのような映画を見たけど、実態は違うんじゃないかな、そういうことが、あと20年後に分かることだと期待しております。
今上から物を得た時にはもうほんまに満足っていうのかな、病があったら病の自慢して、ね、家庭で食べたくてね、普段の生活をさせてくださいって、
thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, please meet Megumi Sasaki. Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
I'd just like to start by asking how many people who saw the screening have seen The Cove as well? So, about half or so. And I'd also just like to reiterate the advice of the Japanese policeman in the movie that Japan is a country of manners, and let's have a vigorous debate here tonight, but respectfully and politely. Megumi, thank you so much.
Thank you. I
want to just start by asking sort of the big picture. The Cove was a very, it was an activist movie. It was very well done. It was very effective, but it was an activist movie. And what did you set out to do? What was your goal for A Whale of a Tale?
Sure. I was really struck by the movie The Cove when I saw it in New York, 2009. It's a really powerful, excellent movie. But it's so one-sided, and it's full of prejudice, and there's a lot of misinformation in there. So I live in the States for 30 years, and when it comes to whaling, it's always one-sided. You know, in this country, you hear always both sides of the argument over the controversial issues, but when it comes to whaling, we only hear one side. I was wondering, why is that? And then I thought that's a lack of information. And there is a real life of real people in Taiji. So I'm not an activist, I'm just a storyteller. I'm just a filmmaker. So I don't have a, you know, agenda to push. I just wanted to tell a story. I wanted to give a voice to the people who, those who don't have. That's all I wanted to do.
Well, you've talked about your storytelling technique for this, and you've pushed back against the suggestion that you tried to be neutral in this. What is it that you were trying to achieve? If you weren't trying to counter the other side with activism, mm-hmm. but you're not comfortable with the word neutrality, or, you know, how do you describe your approach?
Yes, a neutrality is a very tricky word. I think I was also carelessly using the word neutral, but later on I found out that there is no such thing as neutral, because it depends on where you come from. The neutral point really differs, right? It's different person to person. So I try to be balanced. I try to come in with my perception or my preconceived idea towards anything or towards anybody, so that I can just sincerely listen and try to understand why they're doing what they're doing, or why they're saying what they're saying. So I would say I would use the word balance instead of neutral. But I just found out, you know, people don't like that. People don't like a balanced film. So I really I'm having a hard time, especially, you know, among the festival circuit, and also people, the audience, they expect the filmmaker, especially American documentary films, to be coming forward with a very strong message. But I just didn't want to impose my idea. I just want to confuse the audience. I just want to present all the materials, and I want audience to think and feel and form their own idea.
Do you think that, so the movie premiered in 2017?
2016.
2016.
In Busan.
And then showed in Japan last year. And it's about to open here, obviously. What impact do you think it's had so far on this issue? And I guess I should say this issue is many issues. It's ostensibly a whaling controversy, but it's actually about, you know, much more. And I guess what I wonder watching the film is, you know, at a number of points there are attempts to talk and then kind of an agreement to disagree. Mm-hmm. So are we making progress in this quest for communication?
Well, it's very difficult to measure, you know, what defines a progress,
right.
I think. But again, I'm not trying to push my agenda. I'm not trying to impose my idea. But at least I wanted people to think that there's always the other side. And in Japan, for example, people were so angry about the cove and the sea shepherd. But when I showed this movie, I had a very surprising and pleasant response from them. And, you know, because in Japanese media, the sea shepherd is portrayed such a bad guy, you know, in the Japanese media. So people mm-hmm. just didn't like them at all. But after they saw the film, A Whale of a Tale, they came to me and then say, well, I thought sea shepherd was really bad people, but I kind of like them, you know. Some of, you know, what they're saying totally makes sense. So I thought that, you know, I was very happy to hear that.
I wanted to ask you about that because in one scene, one of the sea shepherd women is walking by and insulting the cameraman, the guy who's photographing her, but almost, you know, very soon after that, they're down by the cove and they're talking about the need to discuss, you know, you have, what was his name, Nakahira, the activist who says he's not right wing, but maybe he is. In any case, but then in that scene, everything is very congenial. Like he's joking with Scott, and the woman who was scowling up on the bluff beforehand is kind of laughing at the conversation. How did you? I mean, it's like these antagonists are also very congenial. How did you bring that out? How did you? Was that something you just observed, or do you think that's something
you
contributed to?
Yeah. Well, majority of the scenes that shot in 2010, it happened in just one day, believe it or not. And it was such a dynamic experience as a documentary filmmaker because we were just, you know, holding a camera and everybody was like framing in and start unfolding in front of the camera. We didn't, you know, actually trigger anything. It just happened in front of us. And, you know, because all those characters are very strong and sometimes people ask us, and how did you cast, mm-hmm. you know, these characters? But no, they just happened to all come to the cove and start doing or saying whatever they wanted to do. So in terms of Nakahira, he is a member of the so-called right-wing group, and I thought he was the one. And if you're working for mainstream media in Japan, those kind of people are just the first people you don't want to deal with. You avoid, you know, talking to them. You don't point the camera because you never know.
Right.
They're like, you know, Yakuza people. They started like yelling and screaming at you. So I was really afraid at the beginning. Hmm. But he was the only person who was speaking in English. And he was the only person who was trying to communicate with the other side, meaning the activists and Sea Shepherd members. And then, you know, they were forming some kind of interesting friendship there.
Right.
So, and then what he says totally makes sense. And he was, you know, saying a dialogue is an important thing. Why don't anybody try to talk to them? And then he's not just saying that, he actually initiated the dialogue,
right.
Organized the dialogue event. So I give a huge credit to him.
Right. I'd like to open it up to questions from the audience. There are two microphones. If you could come down and just identify yourself and ask a question. Sure.
Thank you very much for a fascinating film. I'm curious, as a documentarian, how many hours did you end up having to bring down? And considering that you did this after the cove, how were people receptive to you in terms of your ability to interact with them and get the story that you wanted? And at the just one person at the very end, I don't know who, I forget who he was, sort of recognized that maybe whaling and dolphin hunting might be coming to an end, and who was ready to try and provide some other means of sustainability for the fishermen. And was that just something that was just not your intent to cover where things may go? Is that another film?
I hope not. So that person who was talking about the future plan is a mayor of Taiji, actually. And the mayor has a different position and idea towards his dolphin hunting practice, because he has to see far ahead of the future of the town, just like his uncle back in 1960s, in the height of whaling industry, thought that there's going to be one day that there's no longer whaling and they won't be able to go down to South Pacific and do whale hunting. So that's exactly what happened. So the, you know, mayor, as a leader of the town community, he's always looking at the future and about the sustainability of the town. So the first question is the
how many hours
of the footage, you mean? I haven't counted it, but at least there should be 100 hours. I mean, 200, maybe 200-300 hours of the footage. It took me 6 years to finish it. Started filming 2010 and finished 2016. There's a few years of a break in between, but yeah.
Were both sides receptive to you, or were they both sides reluctant because of the code?
I think definitely Scott activists don't like this movie. And there are some extreme animal rights people who don't like to even, you know, look at it. Or they don't even want to accept the idea about the balanced view. They believe that there's no such thing as balanced when it comes to dolphin and whale hunting. But overall, I think we show this film several times in the US, North America. People are very accepting and agreeing in many points. And even though they don't change their position or idea towards whaling, I mean, they still, you know, against whaling or dolphin hunting, but they seem to be more understanding after they watch the movie. And Japanese, yes, they were very happy with the movie.
Which side?
Last question, last follow-up. There are other people who want to ask, but I appreciate it. No, I know, but go ahead.
Mostly Japanese audience. This major part of this film was funded by crowdfunding in Japan.
We'll have more on that in just a bit, actually. Yes, please. And please identify yourself, if you could.
My name is Alexander Lee. I'm also a documentary filmmaker. There's a couple of us in this audience. I wanted to thank the director, Sasaki-san, for making a powerful film. And I really wish that your film has as much success or more than The Cove. I think it really deserves to be seen.
Thank you so much.
I had more of a commentary than a question, and I hope that's okay.
Please keep it brief.
I'll try to keep it as brief as possible. Specifically for the audience members who are here, it's something that I've noticed was the leaders of Sea Shepherd and also Rick Berry happen to be Americans. And I think the Americans in the audience should recognize that there tends to be a bit of a extremism when it comes to these types of topics. And you have to think, what is it a coincidence, though, that all the people who are there, well, not all, there are people from other places, are Americans. And if you think about the number of Americans that make up the population of this world, I calculated about 4%. What is my point? My point is, I think that we need to revisit the foundations of our history. And if you look very closely, you'll notice that Puritanism really is the bedrock of American ideology. What is Puritanism? Well, there are certain examples you can see where people take a moral high ground. And I evaluate or interpret many things as hypocrisy. So examples of this. We decry the horrors of Nazi Germany, and yet who speaks of the genocide of the native peoples in the Americas? There are many examples. The use of weapons of mass destruction, that was the excuse to invade Iraq, and yet we are the only country who have used the atomic weapons in warfare.
Can I just try to? I'm sorry, because I think the
no, absolutely. I'm
but I mean, do you want to suggest that C. Shepherd or Rick O'Barry are not? I mean, that they don't have valid arguments in this case, or what? What?
I'm just trying to point out, it's not that they don't have valid arguments, that there is an underlying ideological stance that they feel that they have to take the moral high ground. And they never question about that. And I think it's important that we as Americans recognize that. Where does this stem from, this kind of ideology? It could be any. There are so many other countries where people have animal rights, human rights beliefs. And yet, why is it that the people who are there at the front lines are American? I think that we should evaluate that as Americans. And that's a totally different topic. But it's something that I think should be explored further, because I think that the hypocrisy, and this is something that I think is brought up in the film, is really something that is disgusting, in my opinion.
Thank you. Can I just pick up on that? Because I think one of the Sea Shepherd activists who's live streaming or whatever is not American, she's Australian or something. I mean, was there a mix of the protesters that you observed? Was there a mix of
Definitely.
Nationalities? There was an Australian guy as well. I'm not saying that it's only, but I think that, that's my question.
Yeah, Sea Shepherd, we picked, you know, I mean, I featured Scott and Laura because Sea Shepherd, those are the only two people who stationed there permanent, I mean, not, I wouldn't say permanent, during the hunting season, starting 2010, the year the Cove won the Academy Award. So they sort of came in and went to the Cove every day, watched the hunt, tweet and spread the word, sent, you know, took pictures and images, and that's why they happen to be Americans. But the last thing I want to do is that I didn't want to make this movie Americans versus Japanese, or even Japan versus West. You know, if there is a colliding forces here, I think there is a globalism, global versus local. Because to see the dolphins and whales as a majestic animals, we don't want an intelligent animals, and we don't want to kill them and hunt them at all for no matter what reason. It's a global idea. I think originated from here in the US. And I think in Japan too, the younger generation, they've never eaten whale meat. We grew up eating whale meat at the school lunch. That was a regular school lunch menu. But the younger generation, Japanese, they have never eaten whales, and then they think dolphins are really amazing animals, so they don't want them to be killed. So it's a global idea, or Hollywood descended to this small little, you know, town in Japan, and how this small town's community and history, culture, that collides with a global standard, 21st century global standard. And then what happens? So that's something that I just wanted to tell. It's not about, I just didn't want to be critical towards Americans or American culture or whatever.
No, I am being.
Thank you. thank you very much. There's
thank
a question
you. Yeah,
here.
No, I'm
we
finished.
Can talk about that later.
Yeah. Sure. Thank you.
Hello, good evening.
Hi.
I met you earlier. My name is Alex Helisek with Breeze Bay Productions Media. I'll keep it short and concise. I have two points or two questions that I would like to ask you about. The first one that struck a chord with me was the commentary about how the Western media tangles the truth, so to say, or at least mangles it. And, you know, as a media outlet and a journalist, we try and find things that are as least biased as possible or make it as least biased as possible. We are aware of the Sea Shepherd Gala as we've worked with them before, and we understand that they have a lot of very wealthy donors that range from all sorts of Hollywood celebrities that put in millions and millions of dollars to defend, you know, animals and animal rights in the oceans and whatnot. So my question is about the Japanese media. As we saw in one of the scenes, there was a mobbing of media that was there that was talking to the people in the township, portraying the meeting and whatnot. I was curious about the portrayal of this issue in Japan, and if there's any internal groups that are looking to do as much of an effort as Sea Shepherd is, because as they stated, they do not want outsiders coming in messing with their culture and their towns. So is there a force within Japan, as if Japan can handle these types of issues, so we don't have to look like the policemen in this issue as well as Americans? So curious about that.
Yeah, as you see, so in the movie, there are two women who represents the anti-dolphin hunting activists and journalists. And they were very critical towards hunting and whaling. But I think striking difference is that, I don't know if you picked it up, but they don't use social media. They don't do Twitter for health. They don't do Facebook for health. So how do they, you know, spread the word or, you know, impact?
Well, I was just curious about the other media outlets that were there that were literally blocking the doorway while they were recording that issue. Mm-hmm. So I understand that the two women that you interviewed were a part of that, but is there a larger organization that does make a movement towards solving this besides Sue Shepherd?
So I think the activism is very... It's not like here at all in Japan. It's not accepted. I mean, it's legally, yes, you can do it, but NPO activity is very difficult to do in Japan, I see.
Okay. Second question that I had was about the... Since the issue is so sensitive to them and that they have been doing it for hundreds of years and that doesn't seem like you can just cut that out and stop it, was there any type of proposal to have... If they look at the whaling as if livestock of chicken, beef as the, and pork, as they said in a rebuttal in that meeting, was there ever a discussion of like mating and then creating more dolphins in order to, I don't know if you'd say quell the flames or at least to chill out the other protesters and whatnot, but if they're looking at the population, it is inhuman, it is wrong, along those lines, but you can't just stop it. Was that ever thought of, or was there a halfway point that could have been reached in any of these negotiations at all?
To stop hunting?
Even about like reproduction of said animal, because, you know, mating them, breeding them, as we do with cattle and livestock and chickens
right.
in this country.
Right. I think like in the U.S., in the aquariums, like then dolphins are breed. They breed dolphins too, so they don't catch wild animals anymore. I mean, dolphin shows are disappearing here, but I think they expect Japan to move towards that direction, but Japan has such a limited land and space, and it's very costly to, you know, breed dolphins, and it's very difficult. They don't have the technology. So I think it's very difficult. I do not see, I haven't heard that there is some directions to go in there.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. Appreciate the documentary.
Thank you.
Thank you. Just kind of picking up on the point about the other ways of living with dolphins or breeding. I mean, Jay, who is, since your update at the end of the film, has actually gone back to Taiji to write or to research his dissertation. Because
right.
We were hoping to get him from Phoenix tonight, but he's in Japan. In any case, he's still writing stories, too, and he wrote a piece in March that talked about the bold plans to move forward, and so this sentence: the town is pursuing projects like a new sister town relationship with a town in the Faroe Islands that also hunts dolphins, a 5-year, nearly $15 million deal with Chinese aquariums to supply hundreds of live dolphins and training, and then it talks about the initiative to convert the bay. So dolphinarium attendance is going down here, but now we have the rise of China, and that seems to be, you know, and that's one thing that Rick O'Barry talks about. There are the two issues, the slaughter, but also the capturing and
right.
continuing that. So it sounds like as part of the future, whale hunting will continue and whale capturing will continue. How do you think that will play in terms of working toward a cultural understanding of this industry on both sides?
I think each region has a different speed towards moving forward for progression. It's not only about whale and dolphin hunting, but anything like democracy, women's rights issues. We have all come from a very different history, different background. So I think to push the agenda and push the rest of the world to line up exactly where we are, I think that's when people have a lot of confusion and pushbacks too. So China, yes, it's they just finally catch up economy. Now I think their GDP is number two. They just passed Japan. So is this okay to say that this part of the world, like we enjoy dolphin shows, aquariums, last 50 years, but we are done with it. We are moving forward, different new ideas. No more dolphin shows because of the dolphins, you know, animal rights issues. That's understandable here. But what about China? They finally came to this point to be able to build aquariums so their children, everybody, Chinese people can enjoy dolphin shows. And do we have a right to stop that?
We have time for one or two more questions. Anyone else in the audience? Yep, if you could come down to the microphone, please. Is there a way to move the microphone up? It's because she's in the middle of the row. We might be able to get it to you. Oh, you're on your way.
I'll get in my 10,000 steps. So I thought it was so interesting at the end that the two, Emma, the Sea Shepherd people, what were their names?
Scott and Elora?
Yes, mm-hmm. That they resigned, and I was just wondering if you knew why. And also, I did want to say congratulations. I thought it was a really beautiful and thought-provoking film, so thank you very much for providing a completely different perspective from what we've been seeing. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Yes, I get to ask the question a lot. I heard from Scott that Sea Shepherd is going towards different directions from their ideal directions, which is more aggressive, forthcoming. But Sea Shepherd is sort of like not as aggressive as he wants to be. So, you know, there's sort of like disagreement between the leader, Paul Watson, and Scott. So he decided to resign. Yeah, that's what I heard.
Interesting. And one quick question, and then I'm going to turn over the floor to something you want to talk about. Since this was a reaction, in a sense, to The Cove, mm-hmm. what were some of the particular, other than the general villainy projected in The Cove and the demonization of the Taiji residents, the fishermen, what certain elements of that film did you find off as wrong or skewed as you did your research for and your filming for A Whale of a Tale?
There are many things, but I think one major thing is that it's a sort of like a myth about the mercury contamination. When the activists talk about the dolphin hunting, anti-dolphin hunting, or about Taiji, they always talk about mercury issues. But I think it's a myth. Okay, it's a fact that they find a very high level of mercury there, contaminated. I don't know if contaminate is the right word for it, but why mercury, the meat is, you can find a high level of mercury and there's a danger there. So why don't we see any sick dolphins or whales dying because of it, right? And as you saw a little bit in the film, so mayor of Taiji decided, we just don't want to go with all this like rumors anymore, because they're always targeted, like they're always criticized about the mercury poisoning, and mm-hmm. then they're told that, you know, they're poisoning their residents with this meat. So he decided to go ahead and do the scientific research. So they took a hair sample of the residents of Taiji, and they did find a very high level of mercury from the hair sample, which is four times higher than the Japanese average, which, you know, you saw in the film. But surprisingly, there is no one who got sick from that. No one. That's more surprising.
So there wasn't the mercury poisoning, cases of mercury poisoning in residents, children, or adults in Taiji.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, if the mercury is not just in dolphins and whales, and the dolphins that they hunt, the mercury level they can mercury level found in the dolphins hunt in Taiji and eaten by Taiji residents are just about the same mercury level as tuna. Okay. And so it's not that different. And there's a chemical, it's called selenium, and that seems to come, you know, also detoxifies the poisonous of the mercury. I mean, I don't want to get into too much details, but, and I was really struggle how I can put that in the film, because I didn't want to be too technical about it, but something that I really had to mention.
Well, it was, for those of you who saw The Cove, it was a really powerful part of The Cove where they went into the history of, in Japan of the cases of mercury poisoning from other animals, not from dolphins,
right.
I don't think.
That was from the factory waste. It's
right,
a
factory
massive
waste from
amount
in the
50s, of like a,
yeah. And
it's very different.
But and then after The Cove, the director, Luis Aihoyos, would often make mercury poisoning the cause celeb of the film. And Rick O'Barry in your film also says, like, stop poisoning the people. But it's tough. It's a public health issue. It doesn't, you know, it sounds like Japan is monitoring it and their equivalent of the FDA is doing it. But it's one of the most memorable parts, other than the killing in The Cove. It's one of the most memorable parts of The Cove. But anyway, so the floor is yours for some final comments that you wanted to
say. Sure, yes. I don't know if you have grabbed those two cards with you today. So first of all, the film opens in LA next weekend at the Lumley Music Hall. So please, if you like the movie, please let your friends know and spread the word. Also, we're running a Kickstarter campaign to raise expenses to cover the cost for U.S. theatrical release, because we're releasing it independently. And that ends on Friday. So we have 3 more days. We have 10% of the goal, which is about $6,000 more to go. So I'd really appreciate if you could pledge and support the our Kickstarter campaign.
This, just to be clear, this was not a fundraiser. This was just a screening. But you know, as Megumi says, this is it's a publicly funded effort at this point. It's not a government funded effort. It's not, you know, and it's not from any one single donor. So anyway, I'd just like to thank Megumi Sasaki again.
Thank you so much.
And I'd like to thank all of our guests. We know how hard it is to get to events in LA. We really appreciate Asia Society tries to have quality events to justify your time, and we really appreciate you giving us all this time tonight. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Jonathan. Big applause for Jonathan.